Good afternoon. I'm Father Frank Donio, the director of the Catholic Apostolate Center in Washington, D.C. And welcome to this webinar called Strategies for Handling Remote Work During COVID-19. This is a co-sponsored webinar with the Villanova University School of Business Center for Church Management and also the National Association of Church Personnel Administrators, or NACPA, along with Catholic Apostolate Center. I'm joined today with Matt Mannion, Matthew Mannion is the faculty director of the Center for Church Management at Villanova. And so Matt, welcome, glad to have you. Thank you for co-sponsoring this and being a part of this opportunity that as we come together during a very difficult, challenging time in the life of not only the world and the United States, but certainly the church, and our way of working has changed pretty significantly. And so many people have gone into remote work when they maybe have never done that before, or maybe did it part time. We're going to offer a poll in a moment in which we just want to ask the question about how many have been engaged in remote work. You'll see that in our polls, and we'd invite you to answer that question. And then we'll take a moment to kind of look at some of the, you know, what are some of the basic resources that are out there and pieces of advice, Matt, that you think for church organizations at this time?
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, Father Frank, again, and we're thrilled to have the opportunity to collaborate with both the Catholic Apostolate Center and with NACPA on this, and think it's a great resource and thrilled to see so many people taking advantage of this. So looking forward to the conversation and the dialogue with you.
Great. Wonderful. So here we are, you know, this is a wonderful quote, and we're not just working from home, we're working from home in a pandemic. If things feel different, it's because they are different. And I've certainly been experiencing that with the Catholic Apostolate Center team. You know, we do a lot of remote work, but now we've gone full virtual operations, and it's been wonderful and great teamwork, but it has its challenges.
No, it definitely does. And we'd be curious to kind of get the sense of it, but just even looking at some of the challenges that are out there, because there are challenges in working from home or working remotely in any situation. But yeah, I do think this insight from Carmel Choi, who's up at Boston's Mass General and at the Chan School at Harvard, I think is really just crucial for us to not neglect. This is not a normal remote work situation. This is not a normal work from home situation. We're doing it in the midst of a pandemic. And so while there are rules and principles, and we'll share some guidelines and some best insights as we go through this next hour, I think always keep in the mind that this is not normal circumstances, which we all know. But I think sometimes when we put on our work hat or our employee hat or our manager hat, we can kind of separate out what's going on in the rest of the world. So it's just absolutely crucial as we think through this, that people are going through a whole range of emotions and other stressors and other things that are distractions from our day-to-day work that we have to be sensitive to, and particularly from a church standpoint, that I think we have to be attentive to and minister to each other as we're working through those.
And especially also from a spiritual perspective. And I think that's the part that is also very, very important, is that this piece of when working from a church perspective, which whether it's within the Catholic community or within a variety of different church contexts, there is that spiritual dimension that I think is playing an even larger role. Mm-hmm. In terms of the teams at this point. And we'll talk a bit more about that as the time goes on together.
Yeah.
We do invite you to take that poll that's there. It's up. And if you go to polls and take I'm new to remote work. I'm not new to remote work. I've used it a little bit, and then just hit submit. And you'll start to see the percentages there. And people are filling that out. We have about 120 people with us already. And so it looks like kind of an even split from what I'm seeing. 34% I'm new to remote work, about 31% I'm not new to remote work, and about 35% I've used it a little bit. So a pretty even split in terms of what people are used to doing in terms of their work, which is really rather interesting in terms of results.
Yeah, it is. And I think it'll make for hopefully a rich conversation. We'll look forward to the comments in the chat room and the questions that goes through here. It is interesting, though. So for even for those of us who are have only used it a little bit or who are new to it, for those of us who are not new to it or have done it before, I would just remind everyone, we had a conversation. Many of you know Carol Fowler, who used to work with the Archdiocese of Chicago. Had a conversation with her the other day. But she reminded us, again, it goes back to that quote from Carmel Choi, that none of us are experts in doing this during the COVID-19 crisis. Mm-hmm. So regardless of what our experience is, we can learn from that, we can leverage that, and we will certainly share some more ideas here. But yeah, we're all new to remote work during this kind of global pandemic, which we've never seen before. But fortunately, the idea of remote work is not brand new. And so we can learn from what's happened there and what's going on there. And perhaps maybe we should just start off with, because in order to know what to do, sometimes it's helpful to almost be prepared for some of the challenges for it, Father Frank. So maybe it'll be helpful to, before we get into some of the things to do, just to be sensitive of the things that are going to be particular obstacles. This is based on an article that was published just a couple weeks ago by Larson, Vroman, and Makarios. But there's four common challenges that remote work presents. And so we just want to be sensitive to those, and then we'll talk about some strategies to overcome them. But one challenge for many people that haven't done it before on both the manager side and the employee side is the lack of face-to-face supervision. Mm-hmm. So if we're used to coming in, we're used to having conversations on a daily basis or a regular basis with that. And it kind of plays out in two ways. So there are many supervisors, and I imagine this will be the chance for many folks in church work potentially, who will worry that if people are working remotely, that they're not working hard enough. And so there can be that fear. I don't know what they're doing. So because I don't see them every day, perhaps they're just slacking off. But there's also a challenge on the employee side, because employees are used to getting access to their managers. They used to be able to get questions answered. They used to be able to get support. And without that, it can be a struggle for employees as well. So just that lack of face-to-face interaction with the supervisory roles is a challenge. And we'll talk about some strategies to overcome that. The lack of access to information and mutual knowledge is, and I'm guessing for those of you who've been doing it already, we've been remote for over 3 weeks now. Mm-hmm. I was just on a call with our team the other day, and someone's asking, where's this information? And I had to chuckle. I'm like, that's in a file that's sitting behind my desk in the office that we can't get. And so a lot of stuff where you could usually, or if you could walk down the hall and ask somebody for something, just easy access to stuff that's in our offices is different. And particularly since so many of us didn't have a planned move into this remote space. It was kind of, this all happened so quickly that we might not have all of the tools and everything else that we used to have. So there's that from just in terms of resources in our office. But I think the other piece too that, if we do video conferences, we get a bit of it. But if you think about just going in, for those that are used to working in an office, as you walk around in the morning, you kind of check in with everyone and see how you're doing, what's going on. And if somebody's having a bad day, you can get a read off of that early on. And then if you get a short, or at least for me, if I get a short email from them, I'm like, well, I know they're just having a bad day, so I'm not going to take it personally. But in the absence of that connection, if I get a short email from someone, I can be like, well, what are they mad about? And what did I do wrong? And so we can misinterpret stuff without just a lot of the verbal clues, or the visual clues, sorry, that we get from being in a proximate office with each other. And then obviously the social isolation and loneliness, the longer this goes on, that is something they have to take into account. And so it is those informal interactions that are really life-giving for a lot of people. And so without that, and if it's, there's an interesting piece with that too, that I think particularly as church and as communities of faith to be sensitive to, but there's a whole body of research in organizational management that for some remote workers, if there is not that connectivity, then in some ways their sense of organizational identity and organizational belonging decreases over time. And so as this thing stretches out beyond weeks, and we don't know how long it will last, but I think it's a real key piece we have to pay attention to, is making sure that our folks who are working remotely continue to feel connected, continue to feel that sense of belonging as part of the unique mission that we're doing together. And then finally, one is the distractions at home. And so, again, if most people are moving to a remote work situation intentionally, or a work from home situation intentionally, they have time to prepare a space at home where they're going to work. And I love that picture in the top of the slide. I wish my home workspace looked like that. I had a clean office with three monitors and everything. And for some of you on this call, that may be your situation. For most of you, it might be more like the guy in the bottom half of that slide who's got a kid on the lap and is working at the kitchen table and has everything else they're trying to juggle. And so even preparations for the workspace, for the tools they're going to need to work at home, for access to childcare, which is going to be different in this situation. For a typical work from home situation, childcare would be part of the deal and arranging for that for those that are parents. That's not possible in this situation. And many parents are not only dealing with normal childcare issues, but many parents have also become now second grade or seventh grade or high school teachers during this as they're trying to supplement the education. So huge challenges.
And there's another piece to that too, because you have people who are also doing elder care in their homes, and they're trying to, particularly with this, with COVID-19, trying to protect people and who's coming in and who's going out. Multi-generational, suddenly people have become, you know, they suddenly have their adult children.
Yeah,
often with them, and so that's a there's a whole new reality of people getting used to even a living situation.
Yes,
that they were not used to. Particularly, you know, look at the college students who all went home, or people who are in areas, you know, of challenge, and now they're all together. Mm-hmm. There's all of that along with now I'm suddenly working from home, and this is not my usual situation. Mm-hmm. And then there's also those who are living alone, mm-hmm. and are isolated and are trying to socially distance themselves from friends or family members so as not to create a situation, and the isolation that makes it even more distracting in terms of work. So there's a lot. This, again, back to that quote about the pandemic, you know, this is a very unique reality, and also the turnaround. And you mentioned that, Matt, that turnaround that was so fast for this to just occur. You know, it's okay, we're doing it, and mm-hmm. and people didn't have the right equipment, the right situation. I mean, we didn't even get into some of those realities, which I think are in some instances being resolved, but in another number of instances are not. Mm-hmm. But you know, how can a leader really help staff and volunteers, I think, spiritually during this time? We want to jump into that maybe a little earlier rather than later, because I think sometimes, especially in this kind of moment, the spiritual life becomes even more necessary, especially for those who are working within church organizations and faith-based organizations.
Yeah, I think it's so huge, and I think it can be very easily, when we're juggling so many things and dealing with so many transitions, to say we don't have time for that. And so I think one of the greatest things that leaders can do in this situation, and particularly those involved in church work, is to pay attention to how did you nurture each other spiritually before this remote work situation. And as best as possible, try to continue those things. And so, you know, I've always taken such great comfort in, from a Catholic standpoint, the Liturgy of the Hours, and to know that people throughout the globe are praying this prayer together at the same periods, and so to be joined with hundreds of millions of people on a daily basis. And so I think taking a look at within our own particular work communities, what are the ways that we can unite in prayer on a regular basis? What were the ways that we were doing it? And if they were not, I know our team at Villanova used to go to Mass each Monday to start the week off. There was a 12:05 Mass on campus. We obviously can't be doing that. So we have to find other ways that we can still be united in prayer and still connect in prayer. And still, so I think there's one piece there. I think there is find the ways that work for your group or for your team to continue to pray and continue to pray intentionally together, to continue to share faith together. And then I think the other piece too, though, is to realize that anyone that has a leadership responsibility in the church, we should be, and we'll talk a bit more about this in other pieces as well, but to attend to our people and to ask how they're doing. This is a big emotional challenge. This is a big mental challenge. This is a big spiritual challenge to try and discern what God's trying to teach us through all of this. So just not to be afraid of those conversations and actually enter into them.
And how we can accompany one another in this moment, how we can really, even if we're distant from one another, what are some of the ways in which we can really accompany one another, walk with one another, be more intentional about that kind of outreach. I've tried to encourage in a number of instances, whether it's in the work environment or people were serving, to reach out by phone or by a variety of technological means. But a number of people, you know, the good old-fashioned phone has become even more critically important, just to hear that other person's voice.
Yes.
And the comfort that comes from that in a number of instances has, I've been really, have seen that very much present. And just to take the time to reach out in an extra way to colleagues who may not be manifesting, because they're trying to get the work done, may not be manifesting some challenges that they might be having, when we can be present, you know, and it might open up and give them an opportunity to talk about what's going on in a way that maybe wouldn't normally happen in the work environment. Again, we're in a different kind of reality here than we normally would in the office environment. And it's not to say that we don't keep appropriate boundaries, but also to recognize that as churches and faith-based organizations, it's an important aspect of who and what we are.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And it should be just a part of the regular conversations. And there is a way, obviously respecting a boundary, but there's a way to, I love, and so much of our church right now is focused on accompaniment, but I think that's really the great term, Father Frank. How do we accompany each other through this most unusual Lent, through this most unusual Pavilion Easter season? And how do we mutually discern how God's moving through it and what we can learn from it?
And yeah, and we're developing, we have three different webinars that are going to be coming up that are going to be speaking about some of these issues that are pastorally related, accompaniment related. But if you look at the relationship between a supervisor, for example, or director and their employer, staff member, volunteer, you know, what should be that relationship at this time? I mentioned about the boundaries piece, but what should be that relationship? And, you know, how much is too much communication? How much is too little? Oh, you're talking about that communication piece. So what are some of your thoughts related to that?
Yeah, I think there's two things. So I always think anybody who's got a managerial responsibility or a leadership responsibility, I like the expression, I think it's Father James Mallon talks about, they don't have direct reports, they have direct supports. So who are the people that we're trying to support in their roles and provide the environment for them to be successful in their roles? And how do we do that most effectively? And so I think there's two sides to it. So one is, I think we can equip our team members, our employees for success. And John, if you go to the next slide, there's five, and there's so many tools out there and there's so many life hacks out there that I think can, first of all, set employees up for success. And so we'll just offer these five, but I mean, you can find so many more if you do a little search. But a few things that we've seen are just really crucial. Particularly for people who have not been in a remote work situation before. But one is the importance of keeping a morning routine. And there's so much research about how they talk about the golden hour, the first choices of the day, and the successes in the first hour set up the whole rest of the day for success. Mm-hmm. And so in a remote situation, when all these other variables have gone on, we could easily lose our morning routines. And so we just really encourage people, find out whatever it is for them, but have one. Get dressed for work, eat breakfast, exercise, spend time in prayer. Do whatever the things are that you need to do to have the couple wins early in your day before you enter into the work portion of your day. Similarly, which this might seem like an aha for some people and like a duh for other people, but for people that have not done remote work before, for so many of us, the commute to and from work is a great place to transition mentally for what comes next. So we can kind of think about our day ahead on our commute to work and prepare for the things that are going to happen. And we can kind of debrief and transition back to home life on our commute home from work. So again, another tip is, if you are in this remote work situation now, how can you replace your commute? And so I would tell you early on, just even in this little thing for these 3 weeks, the first week, I actually physically got in my car and drove for 15 minutes each morning to transition from breakfast with my family to moving into work mode. We can't drive anymore where I live, and so we're not supposed to drive much. So now I just walk up and down the street for 15 minutes at the beginning of the day, at the end of the day. But whatever your ritual is, find a way to replace the commute time so that you can kind of keep appropriate, which kind of leads into the third one of separating work and home space. So doing it mentally, but also physically. So the poor person working in the top half of the slide who's got their cat sleeping and they're just kind of sprawled out all over the floor, it can be really easy for our workspace and our home spaces to commingle during this time. And a lot of the best practices would say that if you can designate even a portion of your living space, if it's a, you know, one table in an apartment or one room in a house or whatever it might be, and make that your workspace and don't allow your work to creep into every facet of your home space. So if at all possible, just cordon off a little space. So again, we can mentally make the transitions is huge for keeping our sanity in there. And there is the need, and I'm sure many people on this call have probably experienced this already, but when you're at home, the natural bio breaks even during the day. You know, the walk down the hall to the restroom in the office is different than the walk right next door to use the restroom at home. The breaks for lunch, the normal breaks to go pick up food or to do errands coming or going or whatever it might be, or going to pick up stuff from the copier or the printer, all those things aren't there. So it's really key to be intentional about scheduling breaks. So whether you just set a timer on your phone, and but make sure you physically get up and move around during the day. And the last one is just to give our people and encourage our people and exhort our people to log off from work. So to do it at the end of the day, do it on the weekends. Go ahead, Father.
That's one of the problems just in general with many church and faith-based or church ministries and faith-based organizations, that the log off, even if in a work in an office situation or whatever, is often not there. There's a lot of fluidity, and it's one of the things that we made a commitment to, for example, with Catholic Apostolate Center, is like, when the workday is over, it's over. Yes, there will be urgencies and things like that that are going to come up. The difficulty with remote work is that it can become 24/7 if somebody's not careful, because they're trying to keep up with colleagues. It's a little extra effort in order to do that, and that can really bleed into and create a lot of extra anxiety, particularly when you're trying to deal with the home situation, whatever that situation might be. So having those boundaries of I start and I stop. One of the ways that we do it as a team is that those who are working remotely will say, I'm starting now, and they send me an email. And then when they're finished, I finished, and here's what I did today. And that's every day, just a little listing that has those things. And that has really been helpful in also creating a shift for the team members. This is when I'm working, this is when I'm off. And it's a literal log off. And that sounds extreme, but I think if it doesn't happen, it can really be problematic because people will bleed, you know, 2 or 3 hours, oh, I can get this project done or whatever. And that's not really healthy at all.
No, it's interesting. There's even just from a technology standpoint, at Villanova, our computers get the Microsoft updates once a week. And so if you don't shut it down, it will literally stop in the middle of the day for you. And for me, it happened twice in the middle of these kind of presentations and webinars. And so from there, I learned, like, I've got to shut it down on Monday nights to let the updates. But yeah, that habit, that ritual. But I think particularly as those who have managerial roles, we have to model it. We have to communicate it. We have to set those expectations, and we have to support people in doing it, particularly at this time.
We had a question here, for example, you know, do you recommend weekly virtual meetings and using apps to do that? Either, you know, Zoom or one of the other communications apps. We're using Google Meet. So what's your thoughts about weekly meetings?
Yeah. So I've always been a big proponent for best practices in any organization. And again, these are not carved in stone, but as general rules, I think weekly team meetings are huge from a communication standpoint. And there's kind of different ones. So, and this is part of adapting kind of what your new norm is to some of the things that were best practiced before. So I can tell you our team at the Center for Church Management, just the way things work out, and it's kind of the joke of how it worked out. I'll give you the true story. So because I teach at night, I usually get in later than my coworkers. I usually get in at 10:30 in the morning. And I like to have a Philly soft pretzel each morning. So I pick up my Philly soft pretzel in our cafeteria, and I walk upstairs, and and I have just a, we have a quick 5-10 minute stand-up meeting with Chesley Turner and Daniel Gerton, my two colleagues in this work. And so, but we joke, it's like, as long as it takes for me to get the pretzel, that's how long our meeting is. And it's kind of the same things you said with your email, Father Frank, kind of what's on the plate for today, anything we need to know, any new information, mm-hmm. everyone got what they need, great, go do it. So I think those quick check-ins on a regular basis, on a daily basis, if at all possible, or whatever frequency makes sense for your team, are really good. I think having a weekly team meeting that's looking at more strategy and more bigger picture issues, connect everyone and what the whole team or what the whole parish or what the whole church is doing. I think those things are also invaluable. And then I think the third one is just to have regular one-to-ones. And so I'm a big fan of weekly one-to-ones yes. with individual direct reports to see what's going on in their particular areas, their projects, their initiatives. So I think those kind of those mix of things, but a huge fan of weekly team meetings. And I think we might talk a little bit more later on about different technologies, but I think the key for technology as a general rule is find the technology that works for your team. And those could work.
And that's the part. And taking some of those things that you might do live and in person, you know, the weekly check-ins and staff meetings and things that really are best practices to begin with, can be brought online. Mm-hmm. Because the isolation can happen very quickly. I'm working over here. I don't know what my colleague's working on. I don't know what this one's. And so it's that communication that occurred in the office can be brought into an online venue. That's what we've done, certainly. And I know a lot of organizations have done that. They've taken a number of those practices and now put them online and found some way to do that through, you know, whatever communication method they're using. And that's been really successful for them in transitioning into this, over this time. So maybe, you know, what should be the relationship, what are some of the strategies then for a team to keep in communication with each other? Because that's a little more challenging than it is in the office, the office environment, because you can just go and see somebody or have a quick phone conversation or go down the hall, whatever it is. But what about now?
Yeah, so I do think, and I have to give credit to my colleague at Villanova, Narda Quigley, who's done some great work on this too. But the first principle, and you kind of asked how much is too much, and I know I've seen one or two things in the chat room as well. I don't know that too much is going to be the problem that most people have. So all the research would say that most people have a problem of too little communication. And so I think, again, our responsibility is to over-communicate and to communicate even more than we think we should. And so in the absence of communication, people make stuff up. And as we know from studying organizational culture, the stuff they make up does not tend to be positive stuff. And that's in a normal circumstance. When you're in a heightened, stressful circumstance like this pandemic, it's easy to go to dark places. So regular, frequent communication not only helps with isolation, but it also just kind of helps people keep in tune with what the reality of our situation is. So that's the first thing, is just communicate even more than you feel like you should. And if you ever have the doubt of, oh, I don't know if I should bother them with this, bother them with it until they tell you to stop. The second thing too, though, is to expect less productivity. And yes. I'm guessing we've all experienced this already for a lot of the reasons that have been described. But we should expect less productivity because people are learning new ways of doing things. People have all these other challenges that we've mentioned at home. Also, all of our processes and ways for getting things done are changing because we're not doing them physically present to each other. So I do think just from a managerial standpoint, we have to have that. And I think we also have to give our teams, have to acknowledge that to our teams, that we are going to be less productive until we figure all this stuff out. There will come a time where we'll kind of flip the switch and we'll live into this new way of working, probably right about the time that this new way of working ends. But there will come a time when we get some more productivity out of this. But at least in the short term, to just expect it to communicate that and to clarify that with everyone else, that it's going to be the case and we'll figure it out together. I do think that if we're not communicating, it's not only talking at people, but really to be crucial for listening more for feelings in this is so huge for anybody in a leadership role. Because, you know, if we're only connecting by phone, which I think is one of the vehicles we should be using, but as we know, we lose a lot when we're only communicating by email without getting the nonverbals it's difficult to understand the full effect of what's going on.
Yes.
So I think from an emotional intelligence standpoint, to be really clear and actually ask people questions like, well, how do you feel about the decision that we did? Or how do you feel about what's going on now? And give people the chance to verbalize those. It's one more way of kind of accompanying them. Mm-hmm. Then the last two things I just think are so crucial are really to, and I think this is the leader's responsibility to work with the teams, but to clarify, how are we going to do things? Mm-hmm. What are the norms? So even the hours is a great conversation to have, and recognizing a lot of our people, as we said, are dealing with, you know, both parents might be in a parent situation. Both parents are working from home now with a mix of other people in the house, young or old, that might not have been part of the working relationship. So if they're trying to juggle things, I think it's okay to say, all right, are you better off working in the morning and then letting your spouse work in the afternoon? And kind of like, how are we going to do this? But to have those, to not assume it's going to be a traditional 9-to-5 working situation, but to clarify what are the new boundaries. Also to clarify, how have our priorities changed? And so yes. What are the expectations for what we're doing to fulfill our mission in many ways that we were not fulfilling it before? So there's a lot of stuff that we're doing that just can't be done. And so given that, what is important? What is the priority?
And I want to take a couple questions associated with this that have come in. How do you handle the stress and frustration caused by not having the resources you normally have when in the office? So I think we're back to that expectations piece. And that really is also not only on the leader, but also on the person who the staff member to be able to express, these are my limitations in this situation. And that may be difficult for some leaders to hear. Mm-hmm. But I think it does need to be expressed. If it goes unexpressed, there are going to be a mix of expectations. Matt, what are some of your thoughts on that question?
Yeah, not only a mix of expectations, but if it doesn't go expressed, it will lead to resentment and other problems that are very, very unhealthy. So yeah, mm-hmm. I think acknowledging it. And I think to the extent that as part of the regular conversations, either one-to-one or in the team setting, to frequently check in on, hey, how's this work from home thing going? You know, what things are working well that we can celebrate? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of that point on there about finding positive emotional mm-hmm. contagions. It is part of, in these times of unsettledness and these times of frustration and these times of stress, mm-hmm. Daniel Goleman's done a ton of work on this in his emotional intelligence work, but people will look to the leaders for emotional cues on how to react.
Yes.
And so, but I think in terms of not suppressing frustrations, I think we have to acknowledge that, yeah, this is not easy. This is tougher than I thought it would be. But mm-hmm. where's the good that we're finding in it? So it's got to be that balance, but giving people a place to give voice to the frustrations and try and troubleshoot them where we can. And where we can't, just acknowledge, yeah, this is tough for me too. But we're going to get through it and we're going to be okay.
And our colleague, Regina Haney, who's the executive director of the National Association of Church Personnel Administrators, who's a co-sponsor of this, she makes a point here in our question section. We have to also trust. Mm-hmm. And how do you let your team, let the team know that you trust them? Because, and you raised this a little earlier, a bit in passing, Matt, but this thing of, are these people working? Mm-hmm. Are they doing what they're supposed to be doing? And I think that's the part that really, especially as people of faith, we have to have faith in people mm-hmm. and have a certain trust that needs to be there. But sometimes I find that can be lacking. And in this kind of moment, it's even more necessary with anxiety, that's additional anxiety that people are just not used to.
Yeah, Robert Hurley wrote a great article about this called The Decision to Trust, which is not in this particular situation, just a general mm-hmm. decision that mm-hmm. leaders and managers have to trust people. And I think one piece is we have to make the decision. We have to decide, do we trust our people or not? Yes. And because they're going to know we do or we don't just by how we act. But if we don't, I think it's a real question of faith. Like, why don't we? And if we don't trust them, then why do we hire them to be on our team in the first place? But then in light of that, yeah, I do think to the extent that that's where the clarity of norms and expectations can come in. If we're clear mm-hmm. about, look, this is what we need to get done. Do you have the resources you need to get this done by whatever time it needs to get done? So making sure we're there as a support for them, that I think that communicates that we do trust them to get it done, and we're trying to do everything we can to help them be successful in their roles. Mm-hmm. But then if that's the case, then yeah, the check-in is just more from supportive, not from did you do it yet and kind of looking over their shoulder, but more how are we setting our people up for success. So I think that is a fundamental mindset mm-hmm. that we have to have. And then I think that goes back to that communicate more, not less for people, for those of us whom it might be more difficult to trust, just kind of having the regular check-in so we know our folks are doing the things that are, and have the support they need to get done the things they're supposed to be getting done.
If what are then some of the considerations that organizations, we have a question from Paul Jarzembowski about what tips do you have for working from home with others in your household who are also working from home, children, family member using the home space for school? How do you best maintain those boundaries when everyone in the home is doing remote work? And I think that's one of those considerations that we're called to have at this time, because it's just a very different type of work environment, as you mentioned. So what are some recommendations, some considerations for this?
Yeah, I think from a home management standpoint, it's a great question, Paul. And I know it's one that my family is continuing to navigate even 3 weeks in. But I think some things that I've seen in others that have been really helpful is, again, it goes back to that communicate more, not less. So everyone in the family has to be clear about what needs to be done and when it needs to be done. I mean, even right now, when I do these webinars, I kind of have a little text to the family and say, hey, I need the internet for the next hour. But I told them in the morning, hey, I've got one of these things at this time and this time. So they can plan their schoolwork around it, or their live streaming of videos or whatever else around those. But I think to the extent that you can work out a schedule with the people, if you have several people under the same roof, that here's when schoolwork is going to be done and I'm going to need mom or dad support for it, and here's when this thing's going to be done, and kind of juggling and then communicating, particularly from an employee standpoint, with our workplaces to say, yeah, you know what, again, I'm good for these hours, but I've got to take care of home care responsibilities during this chunk of time. Yes. And then I'll be back again for these hours. I think as long as the stuff is communicated in advance, most reasonable people in the midst of this kind of crisis should be able to work with each other to get it done.
And there are difficulties. There are mm-hmm. meltdowns that happen, especially with younger children. There are situations that occur. Maybe there's, again, an elder care situation or something that, you know, and to be able to step away, or to, you know, not do like the sometimes when people have their kids in church and maybe they're acting mm-hmm. and people will glower at them. You know, I mean, to have colleagues, you know, if the kid appears in the workspace, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, that's or the cat or the mm-hmm. dog or whatever. It's a different type of consideration that we have to have with one another. And especially for leaders, and I really want to emphasize this, the leaders need to be, and you mentioned this earlier, Matt, examples and good examples. Leaders are under a great deal of stress and anxiety as well. Mm-hmm. And particularly if they're dealing with some financial issues mm-hmm. that might be challenging for their teams, or maybe it's in order to get the work done, or especially if you're dealing with those who are leading faith communities, and now their churches are closed, mm-hmm. their places of worship are closed, mm-hmm. and this is really tough for those who are leading those, you know, if they're a clergy or minister or whatever they might be, a rabbi who might be, you know, suddenly now my congregation is not there, mm-hmm. and so I think that's the other piece of it, the consideration that can come in the other direction too, because this is just such a unique reality that this country has not, the United States has not seen since the influenza pandemic of 1918. Mm-hmm. And so that's a very, for the leader, I think too, depending on what their situation is, it can also be really challenging.
No, and the need to have self-care for the leader, I think, is mm-hmm. so huge. And yeah, I think the role modeling, to your point, Father Frank. So, and I would just say, too, I think for us lay folks, I've had a new insight over the last week and a half that I probably should have been more aware of. But and I think, Father Frank, even you and I were talking about it. There's a difference between diocesan priests and religious order priests in terms of what they've been prepared for in ministry. And so particularly for those of us that work in parishes where the priests were formed for diocesan ministry, many religious order priests are a little more comfortable if depending on what their career path has been or their vocational path has been, that they've had to pick up and switch and start new things a handful of times. Many diocesan priests, their whole ministry has been in parish life. And Cardinal Newman's got a great quote. They asked him once about what he thought about the laity. And he said, well, without them, we look kind of foolish. But I know for many of my diocesan priest friends, they've talked about how not being able to be in touch with the people in their parishes has been really difficult for them. And so I think a sensitivity for us lay folks, just checking in with our, particularly the pastors, to see how they're doing with this and how to help them stay connected is really big. But I think for any leaders, recognizing the stress we're under organizationally, but also the stress we might be under at home as well, is really key. And to not deny that, and again, to the extent that are appropriate, obviously not violating boundary or anything else, but the extent that are appropriate, to share that with our team members and say, yeah, you know what, this thing's been really tough. My kids, I've got a daughter who's a senior in high school who's lost her senior year. I mean, that's been very difficult for her. And to be able to share that as part of my day-to-day reality is helpful.
Yeah. So my nephew who's coming to Villanova in the fall, he's a senior, you know, as well. And it is. And I work with college students often. And the ones who are seniors right now and or graduating in a variety of ways, you know, that all has changed. And so many milestone events, baptisms and weddings that have been postponed and then, you know, just the whole situation of funerals. I know people in various organizations who have relatives who are very sick and or who have died and they can't be present, you know, to them in the hospital, in the situation. And it's really very, very painful. And so I think that that's another consideration in this moment that we're, especially since we've not seen a diminishment in a number of places, more of a rise. I think that's certainly an important consideration. One of the things in terms of some of the, you had some tips for teams. Maybe we can talk a bit about that.
Yeah, what is funny, so the five tips for teams are the same five tips that we would offer for managers in a one-to-one situation. They're just applied a little differently. But yeah, the communication theme, I sound like a broken record, but I don't think we can communicate it enough, that it is just so crucial. So within our team settings, and in just a few minutes, we'll talk about some ways to do that as well, kind of going back to the technology question. But the need for more frequent communications in our teams is absolutely crucial. And then all the other pieces also go in there, but I do think that clarifying how are our teams, the new norms and expectations, how are our teams going to communicate? So are we going to use Zoom for our team meetings? Are we just going to do it through email? Are we going to use Microsoft Teams? Are we going to use some other tool for it? Which one are we going to use? And when we're there, what are the norms for communications within our team meetings? So how do we know? Are we going to use the raise hand feature? Are we going to just jump in on each other? Are we going to start with prayer? Like all those kind of things need to be reset because we are starting anew. And then the biggest thing I think for teams though is clarifying what are we trying to get done here and what is the most important priority for us?
And we have a couple of other questions that are there, and particularly Father Dave Karen, who's down in New Orleans, and we're going to be doing a video webinar, but it will be used available on video about evangelization and pastoral work at this time and ways we can go about that. He raises a couple important questions that I want to hold for the end because we're going to talk about like the next. How this will possibly change how we work as church as well. And I think those are important questions for us also. In the midst of this, it's hard to think beyond, but I think a lot of things happen very quickly, you know, live streaming. About 10 years worth of work in terms of technology happened in about 3 weeks or 2 weeks. It was quite amazing as someone who's engaged in a lot of this technological piece. It's very important, but you know, it can be, as was raised in questions as well, it can be too much. Mm-hmm. And it can be overkill. So some balance that's necessary in that.
Well, I think to that point too, Father Frank, and I see Paul raised that question. I think part of how we have to offer these things is offer them as invitations and not impositions. Mm-hmm. And so as long as we kind of think of the people that we're trying to offer them for, and these are opportunities for them, I think in that sense, it can be seen in the spirit in which it's offered as an invitation, not a, but there are other things, I think, from an employee standpoint where there are expectations, and we should be clear about those as well.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the challenges for groups working remotely that people should be aware of? And are there assumptions about remote work that are really incorrect? You know, what are some of the things to keep in mind to be proactive?
Yeah, so I think it is interesting. I think a lot of people assume that you can't replace the majority of the good things that happen with face-to-face work with remote work. Mm-hmm. And that can be the outcome, but I think if we're intentional, that doesn't have to be the outcome. So many people will say, for example, we talked about the loss of organizational identity and affiliation is a challenge, but if we are intentional about it, we can overcome that. Similarly, the loss of organizational culture can be a challenge if we let the technologies drive how we're doing things. We can keep the organizational culture and actually can reinforce the organizational culture if the ways that we adopt the technologies are true to our core values and the way that we carry out our mission. So I think all those things, I think it's all about intentionality. And so, and that fundamental question of what is our core mission? What are we in the, I'm a business professor, what are we in the business of? But as church, what is our purpose as a church? And what is our purpose as a church at this point in history? And it's changed from 3 weeks ago. So we're still spreading the good news of Jesus Christ. That is never changing. But how we do that is changing dramatically. And I think there's an interesting, kind of going off of where you were going earlier, Father Frank, I think particularly for our church teams, this is an opportunity for continued creativity. So we've shown that we can be nimble and can adapt. I would hope we don't have to do it at the same stress levels that we had to for the last 3 weeks, but we've shown that we can. But I think the next piece, and this kind of ties to what some of our work teams and other folks should be doing potentially during this Easter season this year, is beginning to think about the future. Like, we're going to have a ton more. All the indicators are that we're going to have a lot more death over the next month. Yes. That we're not going to be able to accompany people in the ways that we used to. Mm-hmm. But the question that I have is, so how are we going to accompany them? And what are the ways that we can rethink someone who's grieving the loss of a loved one? How are we going to bury the dead? How are we going to comfort the sorrowing? How are we going to do those things? How are we going to visit the sick when we can't do them the ways that we used to? I don't know what the answers are, but I think there's enough creativity and inspiration from the Holy Spirit in the church that we can find ways to do it in this new world that can get us through. And I think that's going to be one of the biggest pastoral needs to solve over the next 4 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, whatever it is.
Yes, I would agree with you. It's a tremendous pastoral, you know, need. And how to go about that will be different. But going about that is not at question. We have to.
Yes.
We need to. We can't turn in on ourselves and become, as Pope Francis would say, self-referential. Mm-hmm. Instead, we have to be going forth, but in a different way. Mm-hmm. It's a very different way in which we're going forth. And that's going to be difficult. And then after, how do we do that care that's down the line when we do have the opportunity to come together again? I think you'll see, we'll be seeing a number of ways in which pastorally these things are being attended to. At least that's my hope. Mm-hmm. It's certainly my own intention, but I know it's the intention of many pastoral people. But I think it is certainly, you know, very much necessary. One of the points that was raised in the chat, too, is that for some people, their level of collaboration has increased. So thank you, Robin Margraf, for saying that, because I think a number of people have found that, too, mm-hmm. is that in some ways there is a bit more focus time and some of the distractions may well be missing, but also there's greater intentionality.
Mm-hmm.
There's this intention to do it. But the intention, I think this is something that we've talked about as a team at Catholic Apostolate Center, is to move from a kind of sprint to a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not that I'm a runner, but that there is that kind of, okay, we did this, but you can't sustain that. That is mm-hmm. unsustainable mm-hmm. and is unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that, you know, very, I want to be really underscore that, because we don't know how long this is going to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And so taking on more of, you know, as St. Paul would say, patient endurance,
mm-hmm.
perseverance, mm-hmm. though, you know, in a way that is over time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what many people are feeling, as, you know, as Robin says in there.
So, I think, Father, just one other thought on there too, that I think as we shift to this, but particularly for our teams, so the grief piece, and there's been a handful of things in literature talking about this as well, not just for those who literally had the loss of lives or sickness or those sort of things, which we absolutely have to do from our pastoral standpoint, but I think the other piece that our teams should be sensitive to is, what are people grieving in the way that they used to work
mm-hmm.
that we have to accompany them through? And so mm-hmm. there are a lot of great plans that many of us had for the spring and for the summer. There's a lot of things that we were looking forward to that we're not going to get to do. And mm-hmm. I do think I don't think we can just gloss over those.
No.
In a leadership role. I think we have to allow time for that. We have to allow people to mourn, to grieve, and use mm-hmm. our gifts of ritual to process those and then to move on. We're not a Good Friday people. We are an Easter people, but we have to help people and accompany them through the grief of what they've lost in their jobs and other things they were looking forward to for the spring.
Yes. And whether that is work-related or personal.
Yes.
Either way, it's there's still a grieving that goes along with that that can affect the whole of all of this. So maybe let's look at the finance piece then. You know, with donations not coming in as much or at all for parishes.
Yeah.
I mean, are there simple things and inexpensive resources that people can use to, you know, in terms of productivity?
Yeah, the couple quick things that I would say is, one, I think the most effective thing we can do that doesn't cost anything is to make sure that we and our teams are focusing on the most important things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we just have to winnow away and cut away all the stuff that is non-essential and have people using whatever time they have on the most important things. And so that requires dialogue and conversation. But then in terms of those tools, I think just that's again where that spirit of collaboration, both within our teams, but also within our networks, is big. And so asking the people who are productive, how are they doing it? What are the secrets they're finding?
Mm-hmm.
And so we've already had a couple instances on our team where people say, hey, I found this tool. This is really helpful for me. Maybe this will help mm-hmm. the others. So I think just leveraging the networks for them. I don't have any particular tool that I would say use this one, or this one. To me, the biggest things are finding, one, focusing on what's most important. That is by far, regardless of tool. But then two, looking for the other ones. There is just, I mean, and this kind of speaks to a bit of what we talked about in terms of frequency and meetings and everything else. But the biggest thing is to find the tool that works for your team. So the tool that works for my team is not necessarily going to be the tool that works for your team or somebody else's, but find the ones. And so, I mean, we do, I mentioned the frequency of meetings that we have, but part of, because we're spending a lot of time on Zoom for our strategy team meetings and for our project team meetings and for other things that we need to do, part of what we've agreed to as a norm for us is that when we do our one-to-ones, we actually start them on the phone because we're sick of being on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if we need a quick answer on something, you know, we'll use text if we need an immediate answer. We'll use email. Yes. We got a little more time. Well, so we kind of have started to fall
into
which tool do we use for which particular thing. And I think that really is, I think that is crucial for it.
One of the things that we've tried to do in terms of, you know, is a virtual coffee break we've put in twice a week now, where people just come, and we're getting a fair number of our team members who are coming and doing it. And we're not talking about anything work related.
Yeah.
We're just talking about, you know, okay, what are people cooking? What are people, you know, what are some of the things that are going on, what's happening in your family, kind of the what seems like very basic things, but particularly at this moment, I think are appreciated. They're the human things that we can share in a moment like this.
I think it's a great example too of clarifying the norms and expectations for that one, Father, mm-hmm. too. So we're on a coffee break, we're not talking work. That's not allowed to be. And so again, when people set those expectations, people know how to follow them. So yeah, whether they're coffee breaks or happy hours or all those kind of things, I think are great.
And the happy hour part, you know, is we were joking about that, Matt, that, you know, nobody's driving.
Yeah. So there's no liability for the organization.
There is that part, you know, that we often think about. So, you know, I want to go back to Father Dave's question, Father Karen's question. You know, he asked, you know, Matt, do you think that this remote working during this time of the pandemic will change the way that we will work in the future in the church? And so I think, and then he has a follow-up question, you know, as the Academy has created programs to teach in certify faculties for online teaching and learning, which you do, you know, the Center for Church Management, the MSCM, the Master of Science in Church Management, is online. They come for a week and then everything else online. Great program, graduate of it. Yeah. We will see something similar for church ministers. So any thoughts about that and kind of the future, because we're coming close to the end of our time together.
So I do think it will change things for us. I don't know what it will change things to. But yeah, I think we all have to realize that the world as we knew it no longer exists. And we're figuring out what this new world is going to be, but it's different. And so, yeah, we are creating, it's interesting, there's all this research on how long it takes to form a new habit. And most of it would say somewhere between 35 days plus or minus. So, you know, if we go 7 weeks of people attending Mass, one of our advisory council member calls it, we're creating a whole culture of armchair Catholics who are now getting used to going to Mass sitting in their chair. Well, if you do that for 5 weeks or 7 weeks, then does that become the new habit? And how do we help people get back to the communal gathering? All those kind of things are going to be different. And what I would say is I think the principles of effective leadership and management don't change regardless of the form. So the need to communicate more rather than less, the need to expect less productivity during the transition, and then more is going to happen when this thing ends. The need to listen more, the need to clarify expectations, the need to find the positive social, emotional contagions, all those things are going to be there. But yeah, I think we are learning on the fly a lot of new ways of doing things. And I think I can tell you just from some of the research that we've already started in these past 2 weeks, but there's going to be a lot more research on what does this mean for how are we church? And it's also not just in church. I mean, what's it going to mean for us as a society on how do we act? So all the norms for work and understanding of it, both in church and in the secular world, are changing. And
yes,
don't know what they will be, but they will be different.
And Matt, you have some resources that the Center for Church Management is putting together, some webinars and some additional resources. Could you talk a little bit about those and where people can find them?
Yeah, so we've done a handful already on some of the financial challenges, some of the communication challenges, some of the HR issues. This one obviously will fall under that broad umbrella. And so anybody can go to VillanovaChurchManagement.com. So it's a website that we got, and part of our work for this even was funded by a grant we received from the Lilly Endowment as part of their national initiative to address economic challenges facing pastoral leaders. Mm-hmm. But there's a special COVID-19 section that we're putting some articles that we're finding that are useful, videos of these webinars and things that we've done. And so, yeah, it's a simple login, and it's free, thanks to Lilly. And those resources will be there. And the great resources that you're doing and others are doing, I think the more we share with each other, the better off we'll be.
And we have a number of both spiritual, managerial, dealing with the psychological issues, a number of things. If you go to, for us, to catholicapostolatecenter.org/COVID-19, we have those resources available. They are all at no cost. We've been trying to collate. They're updated literally every day at this point. And this webinar will be on that page, as well as on our webinar section, and then also will be on the page that Matt mentioned earlier. Matt, thank you for a fantastic conversation. I want to thank all of you who joined us for this time. Thank you for your wonderful insights, questions in the chat. People were giving different tips to one another. And that's what we really want to see, is how we can learn from one another during this time. And so know that, as especially as we enter into a very sacred time for both in the Jewish faith tradition and in the Christian faith tradition, know that our prayers are with you. And thank you for this opportunity. And know that we will be offering more things coming up over time. So again, thank you, Matt, and take care, and God bless.
Great to be with you. Thanks, Father Frank.